This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, it's Danny. I'm 45. I'm from Manchester. I joined the OTI community in October 21. I was sceptical at first because I'm not on any sort of social media, and I've been in a couple of other very large online sober communities before. I was amazed right from the offset the involvement that Shaz and Ben have in the community. I thoroughly enjoy the Zoom calls. And I've met some pretty good pals along the way that I didn't realise I was in the market for. We've been out for hikes. It's just great. I've been in touch with like-minded people, and it really has been a game changer. So I'd encourage anybody to give it a go.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's absolutely fantastic to have you listening. Thank you so much. You might be finding us for the first time, in which case, go back. Fill your boots. We've got series one, we've got series two, and we've got this series three, and it is a series that never, ever ended. And we shall be wanging on about sobriety until the end of time itself. Quick reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Took a break from alcohol in 2018 after yet another summer of absolutely, well, basically drowning in rosé wine and everything else that went with it. I have just checked my little counter app because I don't count anymore. 1,715 days alcohol free, and it never gets any less exciting. Honestly, it really, really doesn't. People say, how much did you drink? I drank every single day. I don't come back with an amount anymore because I don't think it's very helpful. Because I would hate for somebody to judge their drinking against mine and think, well, if, you know, I don't drink as much as Shaz, I'm all right then. So basically, I drank too much, too quickly and far too often. And it's just the best thing in the world now. Fell in love with sobriety. And like I said, we sing about it week in, week out on the podcast. I don't sing about it on my own, though, do I? Ben Anderson, how are you?
Hi, I'm all right. Thanks, Shaz. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm 34. I'm a new dad, so I'm kind of bit knackered today, but delighted because I'm chuffed that we're talking to our guest today. What would I say about my relationship with alcohol? Well, I don't think I had an alcohol problem, but alcohol did cause me problems that aren't there now that I don't drink anymore. And in fact, actually, that's a kind of a big thing that I'm really passionate about. I don't think it's very helpful. You're talking about Shaz, it's not very helpful when people go, how much did you drink? I think the most unhelpful thing that we do as a society, actually, is to say that we've got normal drinkers and then we've got problem drinkers, and it's very black and white, and you are one or the other. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's a sliding scale when it comes to alcohol. Everybody's different. And the most important thing that I want to talk about is that you don't have to have a rock bottom to decide to rethink your drinking. Anyway, Shaz, I know that you usually do the big intro for our guests, but have you seen the chat box? Have you seen what Mark is watching has put in the chat box?
Let me look.
I feel that we should hand it over to Mark to do the intro today. Mark said, we've got a guest on the podcast. And Mark says, he's one of our community members who's watching this call, I listen to Dan's podcast. I love his emotional and vulnerable approach. I resonate so much with his story. A different approach for us blokes. What a great intro that is, Shaz. That's probably better than what you're going to say, isn't it?
Well, yes, yeah, nice one. Cheers, Mark. You've just stolen me thunder. But absolutely, you're not wrong. We're really, really excited about today's chat. It gives us great pleasure to welcome Dan O'Reilly to the podcast, a.k.a. millions of people know you as Dapper Laughs. Dan, welcome to Over the Influence. How the hell are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, it's good to be on. It's weird to be on talking about this stuff. It's like
I love it.
Yeah, it's part of my. It's like part. It's part of me now. It's one of the. I think it's one of the positive. Maybe one of the only positive things that can come out of battling with this stuff is how much you can share it to help. So it's good.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely brilliant. We've got so much to talk about. Before we get into all that, now we like to sort of say that Over the Influence is the best alcohol-free podcast out there. Of course we do. But before you came on, Dan, me and Ben were having a chat. I went, the name of his pod, I mean, he's It's so like good. He's got it nailed. So and we're good. Like,
we
shit,
thought
man.
Over the influence was good. Like when we came up with Over the Influence, we were like, yeah, we're not under the influence, we're over the influence.
Over
that's
it.
Great.
Yeah.
Menace to sobriety is absolutely blown out of the water.
Yeah, it was. Do you know what? The funny thing about that, I would love to take credit for it, but I can't because this is a group that I've got on Facebook. It's called Mates, Men and Their Emotions, right? And it's a group. We've got about 34,000 men in it.
Wow.
And it's just for men that can post anonymously or just post as themselves their problems and they can talk. And everything I do to do with mental health, I sort of try and create it together, you know, bring people on the journey. And I put in there that I want to do a podcast. And a guy in there came up with a name, and it was brilliant because Menace to Society, the film, is one of my favourite films from back in the day. So it just works. So I can't take credit. And as podcasts go, I think it's more, it's kind of like a counselling session for me each week, you know, because I get the guests on, but it's normally me that ends up crying. But I get the guests on and I talk to them, and it's been sort of key to my sobriety because I started it sort of as I started this is my second crack at sobriety. And I just thought I've got to indulge my life in it. And I've learned so much from it. It's really helped.
It's amazing. And I saw your sobriety journey. It must have, you know, like the algorithms on TikTok and Instagram and all the rest of it. And I clocked one of you. It must have been a reel or something. And I thought, flipping heck, well, that's Dapper Laughs, you know, from a few years ago. Because as Ben said, we both used to follow you in the past. And so I started watching and I started following. And then I thought, every flipping credit, you're doing brilliantly. Before we talk about where you're up to now, Dan, and the impact that it's had on your life and your partners and your children as well, because I've seen that you've been on the best alcohol-free holiday ever. It looked beautiful. Let's rewind to before you started doing this, because you just said as well then, this is your second attempt at yeah. sobriety. Why did you decide to make the change?
I come from like a culture, a very like laddie culture. I moved out when I was about 15 years old. My parents moved down to Cornwall. My mum moved down to Cornwall. I moved out on my own when I was 15. And essentially I grew up through my teenage years with my mates. And it was all about getting drunk. You know, from the age of about 15, 16, every weekend was drinking. That's all my life was about, basically. It was like work and everything else was in the way of us wanting to get smashed and drink, and it never changed for me. And it kind of it turned into, you know, if something was going good and I was celebrating, I was drinking. If something was going bad, I was drinking. If I was bored, I was drinking. But I never ever considered it or looked at it ever as a problem ever, because I was the same. I thought, you know, the homeless people lying on a park bench clutching a bottle of vodka are the people that have got a problem. Or I think the same as many men that coming up into their late 30s, early 40s, like I'm knocking on the 40s door. I think that many men go through the same thing as me. They push it and push it and push it. And then they start a family and they have a wife and they're stubborn in their ways and they still want to party and life changes and they don't want to leave it behind. And for me, when I realised I couldn't leave it behind and I was being selfish and you know, picking it over, spending time with my family, but also it really, really affected me in a bad way because I also was using drugs as well. So I'd occasionally, you know, from in a month, maybe two weekends out of the month, it would lead to, you know, using drugs as well. And what that done to my mental health, mixed with the constant drinking, was I had extreme like self-destruct bouts. You know, it got to the point that if I did pick up one, I'll be going full blown, you know what I mean? And I just wasn't present for my family. And when I was just aggy, stressed, horrible, snapping. And then the argument started. And when it got dark, when it got really dark, was when I thought, oh, well, hold on a second, you know, what's going on? I got two beautiful kids. And I just didn't want them to look back when they were like 16 and look back on every weekend. And I was hung over on the couch and handing them an iPad. And I just didn't want them to look back and just their idea of what a man is was me either drunk or hung over, which was basically me. And this was the dark, scary part was when I thought, right, well, I'm going to stop then. And I couldn't. you know, I'd go like a week or 2 weeks and I'd be like, oh, do you know what, this social event, or I'd do a month and then I'd be like, oh no, do you know what, I'm all right. And then, you know, I was in and out of it, but not like saying I'm sober, like just for the sake of not having the arguments and everything, you know, inside me, I was like, I want to stop. I don't want to be drinking and using drugs now. And like, so inside myself, I was trying to step away from it. And then it got really bad with me and my wife, you know what I mean? And I was like, right, I think I've got a problem. I'm going to go sober. And went fully sober and done 4 months or maybe a little bit longer than 4 months. And it was coming up to Christmas. And I was like, do you know what? I've proved it, that I haven't got a problem. I've proved that I haven't got a problem. So Christmas is going to get boring. And plus I was getting married. And so my friends and everything were like, look, one of my friends in particular actually was like, look, you ain't got a problem. Come out of retirement. They called it retirement. Come out of retirement for your stag do and everything. And I thought, yeah, do you know what? I'm just going to come back, and at the weekends or on special occasions, I'll just have a few drinks. And within 3 weeks, I was straight back into it. I was out all weekend. And it made me a really selfish person. I just didn't give a... Once I was drinking, I just didn't give a fuck. Oh, sorry, am I allowed to swear?
Please do.
Please fucking do.
I didn't care. And that went on, and you know, I almost ruined our wedding by getting too drunk and drinking, and then, you know, the arguments continued, and ultimately I just pushed it all too far again, and she'd had enough, and mate, I was looking at my life falling apart in the eyes after I'd gone sober before, thinking I could come back, and then I was like, mate, you're an addict. You know, you can't do this. You can't control this stuff. And that was it. That was my rock bottom, I guess. And I literally just put it out in front of me. What do I want? My family, you know, my family, my health and my mental health, or drinking drugs. And I just decided that it wasn't for me no more. I couldn't handle it. And that was it. So, yeah.
Dan, you know, we are all special and unique. But at the same time, we've heard your story so many times before, and it's a societal problem, isn't it? You know, you go, what's wrong with me? I can't stop this. But then you look at it and you go, well, hang on. It's this highly addictive substance that's marketed at us aggressively everywhere we look. It's completely acceptable. It's accessible everywhere. And they're surprised when people go, hang on a sec, I can't stop drinking. Yeah. My stag do's next week, and I'm nearly 3 years alcohol free. And even though I am so happy and confident in my decision to be alcohol-free, like, it's good for me. But still, it's because it's your stag do. Right. And it's not like I've got mates going, oh, go on, mate, go on. They know that I've made this decision and that I'm alcohol-free, and they respect that. The ones, you know, I've lost a couple
There's
of
still
mates.
Something.
There's still something because it's a special event. Why?
Yeah, I just, on this, I'll tell you what it is now. And I the first few months this time, I mean, 2-3 months, it was horrible, man. I mean, I was like, it was like I was grieving the loss of, because this time it was for real for me. You know, like this time I was like, mate, you can't drink. It's over, right? And I honestly felt like I'd lost someone. I was grieving my life. And what it was because I was looking at it as missing out. But now it's all about my perception in my mind. I look at it as being free from it, right? Instead of missing out. And also, I don't let the addiction and the drink and the drugs trick me, right? Because if it's the social aspect, because that's what I tell myself, right? Oh, my mates, and I'm not going to see my mates. Like, if it was the social aspect, right? Going and sitting in a beer garden and having a beer, if that's what it was, then I can easily go and do that, or go and sit in a social club and drink an alcohol-free beer, if that's what it is. But that ain't what I want, because if that's what I wanted, then that's what I'll be spending my weekends doing now. But I don't. I want to be here with my family. It's the alcohol. So I don't want to drink. I want to get smashed, and I want to escape, and I want to lose myself. And that's down to what I've been through in my life and me. So what? Every time I get that trigger, I have that conversation like, nah, don't be silly, man, because you're not missing out. Would you want to go back down that road? It's hard, but I just think that if you can get past the hard bit, and you can experience how good sobriety is, and you can notice that voice in your head for a habitual voice and not being you, then you can make it. Do you know what I mean?
I love that. And I also love that You can go, Mark in the chat. Mark with the brilliant intro just said, boom, yes.
Yeah, I get a bit like, about it.
It's great.
We all do, honestly, Dan. We get so passionate about it. Go on, Ben.
It takes a huge amount of self-awareness. Not, you know, in terms of, first of all, deciding, right, you know what? I want to get rid of this thing because of my family, because of my kids, because I want to spend more time and be more present. But then having that kind of moment of going, this isn't as easy as I thought it would be, actually. Shit. But then having that kind of continuing self-awareness to go, hang on a sec, it's alcohol talking to you there. Now, this isn't what you want. Do you find it as you, because you're 7 months into this now, aren't you? Seven months alcohol-free. Do you find that it's getting easier? Do you find that voice is getting quieter?
Only just recently, like literally only in the last month. I feel like there were stages, right? Like a grieving process of missing the old life. And then like a really like intense, I was obsessed with boxing and fitness and obsessed with talking about my sobriety, like this obsessive stage on it. And I come out of this, like, I feel like I come out of this haze of like, just really like, I was up at 5 o'clock every morning doing it and everything being about my sobriety and addiction. And I feel like I came out of that and then had like a real panic stage where I thought, you know, where it was like once everything had calmed down and the gloss had come off, it was kind of like, oh shit, this is life again. This is forever. And then a really horrible sort of, I had a phase that was going through the whole thing, a real horrible sort of shameful stage where once the clarity had set in of everything that I'd done throughout the years, because I feel like my ego has dropped and sort of left me a little bit. Now that I'm sober, I kind of, and it's all part of like, you can't hide from your emotions, right? I can't hide from who I've been and the stuff I've done wrong. Whereas before, if there was an argument with the missus, I'd be like, fuck off, I'm drinking, suppress it, wake up the next day, I'm not dealing with it, ignore it until drink again. And then, or if I'd done something wrong, oh, fuck it, it was the drink, it was the drugs, right? But now it's like everything has come back to the surface. And slowly I've had to sort, and through my podcast, I've spoken a lot about it in my podcast, slowly I've just dealt with just the part of all the stuff about me that I don't like. Do you know what I mean? And now I'm like, there's nothing to hide from. This is me now. So, you know, let's just get on with life. So it ain't for the faint hearted.
Rewind even further.
Yeah.
When do you think that drugs and alcohol became problematic? Because, you know, I say this to Ben and I say this to any, because you are a young man compared to me. I think you're probably about 10 years younger than me. To do this in your 30s, as a fella as well, I think every credit, and I feel really proud of Ben. He's done this before he's hit 35. You're still in your 30s doing this. I think it's a really big deal and it deserves celebrating. But when would you say that the drink and drugs became problematic, when you maybe turned a corner, when it was less about fun and more about coping?
I actually think probably in my late teens. I think probably like as early as 19 or, you know, I was getting blackout drunk when I was working over in Cyprus when I was 20, and I was getting left on like nightclub floors by my mates, start blackout drunk. But, you know, it was fun. That was what I was doing. But I think maybe when I was 17 or 18, the difference between me and my group of friends and other people was, you know, I don't know if it was the culture or everyone or not, but I always drank to get obliterated. And I think my addiction, whether it was with cocaine or with alcohol, I think that my addiction was to the escapism, was to the switching off, was to the bye-bye world for however many hours. I think that started early for me. And that's one thing that I do talk about a lot on my podcast, and I talk on my social media about a lot, where I really believe it's where I've got a unique insight into it, where I'm talking to men that, you know, if you're drinking to get smashed, like annihilated, yeah, which to most people is the norm, right? If you're doing that, then you have got an issue, because, you know, that's not how you should be, you know, you should be treating yourself like that. That shouldn't be your form of coping and escaping, you know, and if the rest of your life is difficult and that's the only easy thing, then you're in trouble.
But you know what, Dan, you're right. That was the culture. Right. Like, you know, pre-drinks, that is, when you think about that, I always talk about when you're alcohol free, you unplug yourself from the matrix and you look in on stuff and you go, Isn't it weird that we used to do that? But we used to get, like, before we'd even get into town, I was born and raised in Birmingham. Before we were in Birmingham city centre, we were smashed in the cab on the way in. We were smashed on the train on the way in. And that wasn't because I was the only one looking around my group of mates and making that decision, I'm going to drink to get obliterated it. That was the culture.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem to be there now.
No, I don't know. I don't know if the generation below us is as bad, but I think it's fun, man. It's like, it's, you know, if you think life's hard, which life is hard, right? And you're like, oh, here we go. I can just not give a shit anymore for a bit, you know? Woo! Up yours, whatever. Da-da-da-da. You know, like not to care in the world and like completely not caring what people think and just saying what you want to say and, you know, chucking things around. That's what I was like. I was like, I just, you know, whatever to anyone because I'm drinking and I'm drunk. I mean, what state has your normal everyday mentality got to be if that's how you need to do it? And that's the problem because a lot of people think without that, what have I got? And that's what my attitude was. I was like, give up drinking and give up doing drugs, then what's the point of all this hard graft and all this hard work? And what's the point of being a decent person Monday to Friday if I can't be a complete knob at the weekend? What's the point? It's a weird way of looking at it until you come out of it.
It's mental, isn't it? And yeah, until you are on the other side of it, looking back, you know, myself included, you don't think there's a problem. You think it's the be all and end all when alcohol is your very identity, you know, with your social circle and going out and all the rest of it. You cannot, until you start doing it, you cannot imagine a life of sobriety. Why would you? Because surely it's going to be crap. And actually, it turns out the polar opposite is true. But going back to something you just said a short time ago, Dan, and about, you know, drinking and it was the be all and end all and this, that, the other. And then you stopped and you started your alcohol free adventure and the energy you put into that, you know, that the 5 o'clock starts, that the going to the gym, absolutely crushing it. This comes up a lot and we always say it over the influence that you can't do this half-assed. You've got to throw yourself into it. And I swear by the reason it worked for me was putting as much energy into not drinking as I did into drinking, and it begins to pay dividends. And like you've said, it's taken 7-8 months for you to get to the point now where you're like, hang on a minute, okay, it's all right, it's not as tough now, but it takes work, doesn't it? It takes a hell of a lot of work.
I think what used to infuriate me is, and what used to put me off about going sober is, it's like you're going, oh, I've got a problem, and everyone's like, ah, you got a problem, but we're all right. But now, we've all got a problem, right? When actually the stigma around that is if it wasn't considered weird not drinking, do you know what I mean? If it wasn't considered strange to actually go, I want to stop poisoning myself, then more people would do it. You know, more people would look at their lives. If it was a lot, what I'm doing now, to especially to my audience on my social media, where I've spent the last 15 years talking about doing drugs and drinking, you know, my social media has been a reflection of my life. It's like a snapshot into my life. I write my comedy around what I see and feel. So, and to suddenly go sober, I mean, a lot of people have jumped ship. I mean, I've got a lot of new followers, but a lot of people have jumped ship because people do not want to look in the mirror. They don't want the mirror held up to them, right? They don't want to see it, right? So they go, oh, right, yeah, he's gone too far. And the problem is about that is it scares people out of going sober. But I just think to myself, I am an addict. I'm an addict. That's just some of us are built different, or some, I don't know whether we're built different or we just abused drink too much that I can't just have one or two and be happy. But regardless of that, I'm just going to change my addiction from drink and drugs to fitness, well-being, and trying to find peace and calmness. Do you know what I mean? So, and yeah, I've just burned myself out in a positive way. Do you know what I mean?
We're just going to take a very quick break from this episode with Dan O'Reilly, a.k.a. Dapper Laughs. Really good chat, and there's so much more to come. So do stick with us on this one. You're going to really, really enjoy it. It's an emotional one today, isn't it, Ben? It really is.
Yeah, we're about to kind of get into a really quite a tricky
subject area, actually. But it's interesting, so keep listening. But before we get to that, we want to tell you... In fact, Sharon, let me ask you a question. Sharon, do you like pizza?
Funny you should ask. I love pizza, and my favourite, I think, is quattro. Artichoke, mushrooms, ham and black olives.
She is so posh.
Yeah, I do like, and I like it well done. I don't like a soggy base.
No. Do you like, Sharon, do you like pizzas? Do you like podcasts?
Casaprese, it's like probably my most favourite thing in the world. Podcasts, okay. Obs.
Do you like the Over the Influence Premium podcast?
As much as I like the main podcast, I adore it. It's okay. The best.
Well, would you like to come to Birmingham, not this weekend, but next weekend, yes, for a Sunday lunch? It's pizza and podcast day with Over the Influence.
It sounds like the perfect Sunday afternoon now. I'm so glad you mentioned it.
The idea is, Shaz, obviously we've been doing our OTI adventures for a while now. You know, we've done the Yorkshire Three Peaks, we've done Snowdon, we've done the Malvern Hills, which are definitely more like mountains, by the way. They need to get them checked and go for a rebrand. The Malvern Mountains, I'm going to call them.
They weren't mountains.
We went rock climbing a couple of weekends ago in the Peak District. We've done the kind of Action Man OTI adventures, you know, let's all get gear and, you know, look kind of outdoorsy. But at the same time, we know that's not for everyone. So you asked us, you said, can you do some events? I love what you're doing with OTI adventures, but can you do some Over the Influence alcohol-free events where I can sit on my arse? Yes, here we go. We're going to Birmingham to sit on our arses.
Perfect.
The idea is we're going to eat pizza, and then me and you, Shaz, are recording an episode of the Premium Podcast with a live podcast audience.
Can't wait. I'm really excited. First time we've done it. Really excited.
I'm nervous.
It's weird, isn't it? It's like radio. You know, when you're broadcasting, when you're talking on radio, just you and your listener. It's just you and one person, and that's how it feels. You know, on this podcast, it's me, you and our listener having a conversation. Oh, and our guest as well. Obviously very important. Me, you and our guest and our listener.
Thanks, Dan.
But no, what I meant there was it's really personal. And then when you move that, you pick it up and you plonk it in front of a real life audience, it's really, really different, because we're not used to people looking at our funny faces when we're recording. It's going to be really good.
It's going to be great. I think the pizza will definitely be good, because this is a place I used to go to when I lived in Birmingham.
Yeah,
where I'm raised. So the pizza will definitely be good. The podcast, we hope, will be good. Shaz, what do they need to do?
So what you need to do if you want to get involved, this is happening on Sunday the 11th of June. And it's going to be all afternoon, because we hate it when people travel and you've got to rush off and get a train, and we don't want to squeeze your time. So we're meeting at midday. Alcohol-free drink on arrival, pizza included as well. A great catch-up with like-minded people. The event is 100% completely and utterly alcohol-free. And as Ben mentioned there, we are going to record an episode of the Premium Podcast in front of a live audience. So if you'd like to get involved, if you want more info, drop us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Sunday the 11th of June, pizza and podcast with Shaz and Ben. Would absolutely love to see you there. Now let's get back to the episode now with Dapper Laughs.
It's really, I think you're absolutely right. That is 100%. Lots of people who know that removing alcohol would be a really good choice for them don't do it, because they're worried about what people will say. Me and Shaz had a conversation about 6 months ago. What are we actually trying to do with this Over the Influence thing? Because we're not trying to convince every single person in the world to give up alcohol. Like my fiance, Jem, she's one of these weird people. The other night, she had a glass of wine. She got a new bottle and she had a glass of wine.
My wife,
Dan. She didn't finish it. She didn't finish it. And I'm like, what are you doing? You've had a glass of wine that you've had about three sips of.
Yeah.
And now, like, that just wasn't me. It wasn't my experience of it. But for her, she doesn't need to remove alcohol from her life. The occasional half glass of wine for her is fine. So we're not on a mission to convince everyone to go sober. We're on a mission to normalise sobriety as a positive
choice. I like that.
In the sense of, it's like giving up cigarettes. You get a pat on the back. I gave up smoking recently. Everywhere I look, well done, mate, that's so good. you don't get that when you remove alcohol. Have you got a problem? Is there something you're not telling me?
Yeah.
What we spend a lot of our time doing, really, with our community is kind of bringing people together to say, look, first of all, you're not on your own. But also it's kind of helping prepare people for those conversations and to kind of put that armor on. Like, why do you give a shit? I can't imagine, Dan, that you gave a shit about what other people thought of you in terms of removing alcohol. But was that there for you?
Like, yeah, but for egotistical, selfish reasons. Like, am I going to stop making money? Are people not going to like my content? Like, but I had to go sober. I had to go sober to really look at myself and go, mate, what are you destroying your life, mate? Who cares what anyone thinks? Like there's some friends of mine. The last time I saw them was on my wedding day. Do you know what I mean? And I have not seen them since, and they do not talk to me. And I can tell that they're, you know, like their partners are looking at them going, well, look, right? Look what he's doing for his family. And, you know, and it causes friction, you know? And I'm like, I'm happy with that now. Anyone that is not supporting what I'm doing or on the same journey for me, right, I've got my best interest in mind. You can all jump ship, mate, because that's the old me and that's dead and that's gone. And if you're part of that, then you are too, because like things are beautiful now. And, you know, I don't like the old me. I don't like the old me, but also it is me and I had a lot of fun and stuff like that. And I'm proud of my journey of changing and da 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 da. And I hope it inspires people. So, you know, it's hard, isn't it? It's like the old me is like an ex-girlfriend. I don't want to see her, but, you know, there was some fun times there. And some people were just attached to that, you know what I mean? So you've got to let it go. It's hard, isn't it? And I think just on what you were saying as well in regards to the message, I'm very clear with my message as well, you know. Whenever I talk about my sobriety on my social media, I'm very conscious of the fact that, one, there's people that don't have a problem with drink, that drink. And two, there's people out there that are struggling with it that don't think they are. And also there's people out there that are struggling with it and know they are. So it's a sensitive subject. So I always say this, what I'm talking to people out there that have got an unhealthy relate. I always say that they've got an unhealthy relationship with drugs and alcohol, right? That if you have an unhealthy relationship, and by that, what I mean is if it's affecting your work or your personal life or your mental health in a negative way, but you're continuing to do it, then this message is for you. If not, don't listen. Do you know what I mean? So I give people the choice to look at what they're doing, but ultimately, me talking about it keeps me sober. So I'm not going to stop. Do you know what I mean?
Same with us, Dan, as well. It's the accountability. You know, we host this podcast week in, week out. Of course it keeps us sober. It's a brilliant tool for us as well. But equally, it's about shouting really loud for the people at the back that, for whatever reason, you know, might be scared to remove alcohol, might be worried about what it's like, or, you know, might not realise that there is an addiction there. And, as you know, at the risk of sounding like a stuck record, until you remove it, you don't know. And then you look back and you go, flipping heck, did it really get that bad? I want to talk more as well about men's mental health. I love the fact that on your hoodie there, you've got mate, men and their emotions. We've spoken to a few fellas on the podcast in their 30s, and with sobriety comes this whole new level of connection with other men that hasn't been there in the past. Or if it has, in many ways, it's been fake. It's been based on drugs and alcohol and not maybe true friendships. It's amazing to see that these connections can be made in sobriety, and actually to normalise talking about men's mental health, to talk about the fact that it's quite often the alcohol that's causing depression and anxiety, and that it's actually all right to change it all and to talk about this. Tell me about your group. You said there's 30,000 members in it. That's a lot of men.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, but it's also a dark thing. You know, it's a beautiful thing how quickly it's grown, but it's also quite dark because it's needed, right? That's why it's grown so much. And unfortunately, it through my social media, I'm so blessed. I've got such a passionate following that have followed me through, you know, becoming famous, having my TV show, you know, making mistakes, losing it all, getting cancelled. You know what I mean? My father dying, me considering suicide, you know, having children, you know, I've been very open and honest and public about my journey. I'm a firm believer that social media can be seriously toxic if it's just glitz and glamour. Do you know what I mean? Because it makes you feel inadequate, right? So I talk about it, but as a result of talking about it, I get hundreds of thousands of people you know, DMing me, well, I'm going through this, I'm going through that, and I'm going through this. And it used to scare me, you know, because, you know, I don't have the answers, I'm not qualified. And the reason why I set up that group really was so we could help each other, just so I could just direct people to the group and I could say, look, I ain't got the answers for everything, but if someone puts a problem up, say, for instance, someone's got a gambling addiction, you'll have loads and loads, like hundreds of men weighed in going, well, I've done this and I tried this and I've done this. But what I learned about, what I've learned, it's been like a case study. Like, I treat the actual group like a man, right? So I look at it like it's a man and I'm like, look at all your fucking problems, man. Look at everything you're dealing with and what's the root of it. And I'm a film producer as well. So I've been working on different films and making films, and I've had a couple of films come out, premieres and all of that stuff. And I've been writing this film about, you know, about mental health and addiction and stuff like that. And it's really helped with it because I can see what's going on with men. I can see what it is. And what it is when our coping mechanisms become negative, if they're like gambling, sex, porn or drugs or alcohol and stuff like that, and our insecurities and stuff, when we get overwhelmed by this stuff and we push it too far and you don't talk about it and stuff like that, and it consumes you, and then you start losing the things in your life like I did, you know, you're potentially losing your missus, your wife, you know, your kids or your work. It's affecting things and you don't know what to do, and you're in that vicious circle of using it to cope, but, you know, it's destroying everything. And then you lose it. The shame and the self-hate is unbearable, and men's egos will refuse to let us reach out to, well, it's difficult to reach out to women because sometimes a lot of our problems are associated with women, either how we treat women or you know, with our kids and parent alienation or whatever. So it's hard, you know, and you don't, and it's embarrassing to talk to your family and you can't talk to other people. So you harbor that self-loathing, you know, and I felt it since I've gone sober, and it destroys you, that guilt and self-loathing, and there's no way out. So that's where the suicide comes in, and that's where the drinking and the addiction double. So the key to it all is talking, man, and the best people for men to talk to are other men that have been through it. It's just, it, I don't know what it's like for women, but the reason why I work on men's mental health is just because I can see how I thought that I deserved my drink and drugs, and there was no way that it was a bad thing. I can see that. I was there. I was like, what, you want to take away my sesh at the weekend? And then when I come out of it, I was like, fuck me, that sesh was destroying my life. It was destroying my ability to think straight and manage my problems. It was destroying my relationships and everything. And men are holding on to it so tightly because it's all they've got, because the world is so fucking difficult because of that. And it's like, how do you get that message across to them? That, you know, and also well-being. If someone had ever said to me, Dan, do you know what you should do? Like, meditate, go and take cold water dips. You should exercise every day. You should watch what you eat, you know. You should go sober. I would have said to him, mate, what are you going on about, mate? There's no way me 3 years ago would have even considered doing any of them things. Reading. So, you know, opening, sorry, I'm going to keep talking, so I'll stop in a second.
Mate, it's great.
But opening men's eyes to it, you know, and going to lads, look, all you got to do is swap your habits. If you calm down on that, if you start work, like, look at your thoughts, man. That's the biggest thing that I've learned in my life, and I've learned it in the last 7 months, is look at your thoughts as thoughts. Don't look at them as you. Do you know what I mean? So when the thoughts come, when I used to get paranoid about something that's going on or da-da-da-da-da, like, I used to act on it. It was real. It was my life. If I wanted a drink, it was real. If I wanted the sesh, it was real. If I wanted to get obliterated, it was real. That's not real. It's a thought. If I was insecure, that's not real. It's a thought. You know, you've got to manage your thoughts. So now I see it pop in and I go, nah, man. Like, when I do stand-up now, I'm running new stand-up material for my tour, and I shit myself before I go on. I don't think the crowd's going to like me. And I'm like, well, you shut up. That's a thought. That you're not me. And if men could learn to manage their thoughts, you know, and it's just sharing this information.
I'm writing so many notes.
Yeah.
Dan, because
and everything
is...
I've learned in 7 months just out now.
Yeah.
Boom.
Mate, I love it. And because I feel really, you know, as a man in my 30s, I feel really passionate about this. And I do, you know, the thing that I always talk about is that, you know, when it comes to fellas talking, it's that idea that vulnerability is strength, not weakness.
Yeah.
I've written down that the circle, negative coping mechanisms lead to loss, you know, whether that's job, relationship, yeah, whatever. leads to shame, which again goes back into negative coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
And you're right, absolutely the key is to talk about it more. But then, you know, it's also, why aren't we learning more about these, or why aren't we open to these positive coping mechanisms? Because life is always going to be stressful. You know, we talk about that. Removing alcohol isn't the key to solving all your problems. You're still going to have a shit day. Bad things are still going to happen.
No.
You know, for me personally, Dan, I was always really confident in my decision to be alcohol free. But I always thought, what if, you know, the one thing that could kind of knock me off is what if something bad happened?
Yeah.
My son was born back end of last year, October last year. And we found out when he was 4 days old that he's been born, he's got Down syndrome. It's a diagnosis we didn't know about during the pregnancy.
Wow.
The thing that in my brain, the thing that I was worried about was that something unexpected would come along and I would cope by going to the pub. I'd go, right, escape. Exactly that thing that you were talking about earlier. Right, fuck it button, bang, hit it, escape for a few hours. Actually, the exact opposite thing happened in my brain. I went, I need to be here. I need to be here for Jem, my fiance. I need to be here for Leo. I need to be present. I need to be operating, you know, at my very fucking best right now, more than any other time in my life. I need to be operating at my absolute best. What I'm coming back to is, why is things like meditation, when you're talking to blokes, why is that kind of, oh, what are you talking about, mate? Fucking hell, that's, what do you mean you're going to fucking yoga? Like, why do we do that as men? Like, why do we belittle these? We talk about negative coping mechanisms, but actually when something bad happens, because life will always throw you bad things, Why do we feel it's so difficult to talk about these positive coping mechanisms?
Ultimately, as men, right, we're like, especially men, we're ego-driven animals, right? And we're constantly questioning and scanning for you know, threats, you know, what's wrong? So we're scanning. And now, this is what I believe anyway. I don't know if this is science, right? But now what I believe is there's no threats, right? You know, we've got everything that we need on a plate, literally. You know, you can go and buy a sandwich. You don't have to hunt for an animal and all that. So that mechanism of always looking for threats, that's your anxiety. It's looking inside now. It's like, it's still there, but there's nothing to engage it. So we really over-question ourselves. I mean, you said that your son's diagnosed with Down syndrome. I mean, I'm a comedian, and I've done jokes in the past about some awful things, you know, push the boundaries, even about disabilities like that, you know. And I get triggered when I see people and they talk to me about things, and I think, oh man, I've done jokes about stuff like that. And I look back and I think to myself, and I start self-loathing. I'm like, but then I think to myself, well, no, look, listen, there's no malice in what you're doing. What you were doing is you're trying to create comedy. You're trying to be controversial, right? And I talk myself out of it. But that's because I have managed to connect with my thoughts and emotions through doing things like meditation, through stopping, just relaxation, right? And understanding my thought process, right? Because we repeat the same thoughts constantly every single day. I think something stupid like 70% of our thoughts are the same thoughts we had the day before, and they're just repeating in a cycle. And and I call them thought patterns, right? And that's what us men do. And we completely get into those thought cycles and thought patterns, and that's where the depression sets in, the self-loathing and everything like that. And the reason why we don't go and do these other things is because we're not educated enough to do it. Through growing up, my dad went, come on, let's go to the pub. My mates went, what are you doing after work? Do you want to go to the pub? If someone's birthday, you're celebrating, you're going to drink it, whatever. Oh, chill out. You know, every advert on TV, like you say, you know, it's a cool guy relaxing. When they sit down, they've got a glass of whiskey. That's what relaxing is. But in other countries, and, you know, and the way maybe that it should be is, you know, we should be taught at school, I think, about well-being and how to untangle your mind. Because put it this way, if I didn't have all that noise in my mind every week, I would not have been thinking about escaping it every weekend. Now, I've heard a brilliant saying on Instagram that was, you know, don't use, and it really resonated with me, and I used it, and it was like, don't use your weekends to escape your life. Use your weekends to build the life you want, so you don't want to escape it. And that is what saved me in my sobriety. At the weekend now, I'm like, I mean, I'll do it every day anyway. I try and do it as much as I can. But at the weekend is about peace for me, man. Like my swimming or my boxing, and, you know, really getting my anxiety out, and then like appreciating my life, you know, sitting down and spending time with my kids and stuff like that. And it's like, what's your problem? There's nothing wrong. Do you know what I mean? And it comes with untangling the mind. So it's our culture.
Do you think that you are because I know that you've done jokes about disabilities and stuff like that before. I've been following you for a long time. Like we said before we started recording, You know, the first time I came across any Dapper Laughs content was on Vine. At the same time, you know, if I'm being completely honest with myself, before this was something that was kind of, you know, a part of my life, would I have looked at that kind of content in the same way that I would do now? No.
That's the same as me, you know. I got thrown off TV for doing a rape joke. And now I've got two daughters. I've got a 6-year-old, you know, a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I look at the content that I made, and this is all part of it. This is why men are killing themselves, because we do not know how to forgive ourselves. We don't know how to look. I mean, imagine you sobered up and you've lost your family, and another man's bringing them up in the house, and that's when you've sobered up. You know what I mean? Imagine trying to get over that, you know. And that's what I was looking at. I look back on the jokes that I'd done 10 years ago, and I think some of them are disgusting. But 10 years ago, I didn't care what anyone thought. I wanted my content to go viral. I worked out how the mechanism worked. The more people that interacted with it, whether they liked it or disliked it, the further it went, the more followers I'd get, the more money I'd make, the more famous I'd become. I wasn't looking at it, you know, in 10 years' time, when I'm like thinking about the effects of what I was saying. But saying that, and this is a tough one for me, man, that we're touching on now. It's a real tough one, because it's entwined in my sobriety. You know, because up until about 7 months ago, it was everyone else's fault that I got thrown off TV. Up until 7 months ago, I was a scapegoat. You know, it was feminism. It was, you know, and blah, 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 you know, and through my sobriety, I've been like, man, come on. Like, look at what you did. Look at how big your platform is. How many lads followed you? You know, it's like Andrew Tate, you know, look at how many people followed you. Look how big your platform is. Look at your complete disregard. And I was drunk most of the time I was doing stand-up. Do you know what I mean? And look at your complete disregard for people's feelings, you know, talking about people's disabilities and stuff like that. But I was a kid. I didn't know. I was drunk all the time. I didn't have a care in the world. I've had to own it first, then go through a little grieving period of fucking what a knobhead, and then forgive myself. And it's in the last 7 months, more stuff has happened in my career than in the last 10 years. So it's taken 10 years for me to get another UK tour. I've got a 28-day UK tour coming up. And do you know what the mad thing about it is? It's because I deserve it now. Like, a year ago, I probably didn't deserve it, because I was still going, yeah, it was fucking everyone else. It weren't me. And that's the problem with men. You know, they can't sober up, or they can't get to a point where they go, do you know what? Man, I was such an arsehole. I really messed that up. And do you know what I'm going to do now? Because now I know what's important, and this is my personal thing. I don't care what I've done wrong in the past. Is by the time the girls are old enough to Google me and YouTube me, that I put in enough work now to show them how you can turn your life around no matter what you do wrong. And that's what's important to me. So they can look at it and go, I can go, yeah, see, kids, you can do all of this stuff wrong, but it's never too late to turn yourself around. So as long as that's the story at the end, then I'm happy. God, that's made me quite emotional. Sorry, it's fucking mad, isn't it?
It's amazing to hear that, because you're absolutely right. You know, it is about, I think what you're basically saying is that you've changed one thing. You decided to stop drinking, stop doing drugs. You know, that's kind of that version of you is,
yeah, and
is gone.
And just meet myself. Do you know what I mean?
But that's what's happened as a result. Yeah. You've removed these things, and actually you are a different, you're like drinker you versus non-drinker you,
yeah,
are different people.
Yeah, man.
Almost.
I was hiding from, you know, that's what we do when we drink. We hide from life and we hide from ourselves. And, you know, the arguments, like with my wife, it was, you know, I'd tell people that I didn't want to be with her because she was hard work and it was always her. But we don't argue now. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're starting a new relationship. You know, everything's all fun and games again. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there'd be the odd stupid thing about, you know, leaving a wet towel on the bed or not taking the bins out. But I mean, we haven't screamed at each other since I've been sober. And, you know, she likes me. She's proud of me instead of us battling against each other. You know, she's, I mean, there's always going to be an element of, you know, is this you now? Is this for real? Like, because she's had 10 years of the other me, you know? But I think also that she's, you know, she's, that's the thing. If there's any men listening to this now that are in the mix of it, or that have fucked things right up, and, you know, it won't, you know, they'll see the hard work if you're prepared to put into it. They'll see it. And just, you know, one time, she said about 5 months in, she just, you know, out of nowhere, she just went, Dan, I love you and I'm proud of the work you're doing on yourself. And I was just like, fucking hell, I never thought I'd do that. So it's worth it. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking for a second, all right?
Dan, come up for air. Honestly, that's one of the very few episodes where, believe it or not, I've not said a lot. And I just wanted to listen to you and Ben talking there. And I'm glad you touched on everything. I'm really glad you went there with it all, because I was going to ask you some questions about that. And, you know, being a mother of a daughter myself, and I've got boys, and I wouldn't want them to laugh at the stuff that you were joking about back in 2014. But you've owned it, you've acknowledged it, and it's been it's been a really honest and fascinating listen. So thank you. What else can we say? Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I just... maybe we'll have to do another one where you guys can talk. I'm sorry, man. It was...
Listen, this podcast, it's about your story.
When I imagine there's people listening, I just want to you know, because I'm terrified. Like, I think of me back then, and if I'm listening, you know what I mean? And you know, it's just a few things can just change your, you know, a few nuggets of information, you could just go, fucking hell, yeah, all right.
Dan,
it's
thank
been
you.
A real pleasure to meet you. You know what, Dan, I've just got one more question for you,
which all is, right, you got you... another hour?
No, we've got literally 2 minutes.
Come on. You mentioned earlier, you said, I've just written this down, shit, this is forever, you know. You made this decision now, shit, this is forever. Do you feel like shit, this is forever still, or are you excited about this new version of you creating all this content for the girls to see on Google?
Yeah, no, I love it. It's work, isn't it? It's just work.
It is.
It's easier to drink. So it's just work. That's the shit. Shit. Oh, I'm going to have to keep doing this.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like myself again, you know, and I like that I'm owning my shit. I think that that's an important thing for men that we don't do. It's always someone else's fault. So if I've got to be the poster boy for that, then fuck it. I'll take it. But yeah.
And on that note, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for being
so
honest. Thank you for joining us on Over the Influence. Before you go, if people want to follow you, if people want to come and see the tour, just give it a quick plug.
Yeah, just come and follow me on Instagram, guys. Dapper's Instagram. Let me know that you've listened to the podcast in my DMs once you follow me, and I'll reply to you. And grab your tickets in the link in the bio. And when this episode's out, I'll share it and everything. So looking forward to it.
Wow, what an episode. I didn't know how that episode was going to go today. I knew it would be a really, really good chat. I don't think I was prepared for the emotion in that one, Ben. How are you feeling?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because this isn't the first time that we've had someone quite controversial come onto the podcast. I mean, I'm thinking back to when we had John the Meal Prep King on. And obviously, he went on... You know, we talked to him about it on the podcast, you remember. You did a brilliant job, actually, of tackling it head on, because he essentially was absolutely out of his mind, blasted on alcohol, and said some really disgusting things, very misogynistic things. You called him out on it. And I have to say, he owned it. And a bit like Dan did there, you know, he said it's important that you own your shit, essentially. And fair play to him for saying that. And I like the line he said, if I've got to be the poster boy for owning your shit, then so be it.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? It's not easy to own your shit, particularly if you're in the public eye as well. So yeah, huge thanks to Dan for just speaking to us so honestly. He really was an open book, I think, during that episode. Really, really enjoyed it. So thank you to Dan. And thank you, Ben, for sharing your thoughts there. I really appreciate that as well.
Would you like a seamless link?
Go on.
So when I was first aware of Dapper Laughs, it was when I was a radio producer in Birmingham. I'd often go to where we're going for our pizza and podcast evening for a few pints after work. But now,
really?
No pints. I'm going for the AF cocktails. They've got a great alcohol-free cocktail menu, which is why we've chosen the Lost and Found in Birmingham, which is very, very close to Birmingham New Street, by the way, Shaz. It's like a 5-minute walk from Birmingham New Street. Ooh. As well. So in terms of kind of getting there and back on this Sunday.
I might train it down then. I might,
so easy to get the train.
I think I might.
I'd definitely recommend it. Obviously, we can all drive because we're alcohol free. It's great. It's fantastic. But it is really super easy to get the train into New Street and walk to the Lost and Found.
Oh, you've sold it. You've sold it. Less faffing.
Yeah.
Love that.
£25 pizza and podcast evening. We talked to you about it in the middle, so you know what it's all about. But come and join us. It'd be great fun. I say pizza podcast evening.
Afternoon.
It's afternoon.
We've had this discussion, haven't we? We've had this discussion and everybody went.
At length.
Yeah, we're not doing anything in the evenings. Absolutely not. Everyone's
knackered.
No. Afternoon, please. We like an afternoon social. It's all happening in Birmingham, as Ben said there, at Lost and Found. It's a ticket-only event, darlings. Kicking off at midday, running through until 5 o'clock. You don't have to be there for the entire 5 hours. That's a lot of Shaz and Ben in one afternoon. However, we wanted to give you, you know, a really big window because people do travel for our OTI events, which is absolutely fantastic. Pizza included, welcome alcohol-free drink upon arrival. The event itself is 100% completely and utterly alcohol free. So if you want to bring a plus one, a sober curious friend, alcohol free other half, whatever it might be, you know, you've got to fully respect the fact that we are an alcohol-free community, but we would love you to get involved. What are you laughing
Sorry,
at?
Sorry, I'm just laughing because when you say that people travel for our events, I'm currently looking at the guest list of people who've already signed up, and we've got someone coming from Manchester, someone coming from Northampton, kind of not too far away from Birmingham. Then we've got South Wales, someone coming from South Wales. We've got two people booked on coming from Scotland. And we've got Helen coming across from Bahrain. People really do travel.
Is she actually?
Yeah,
well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah amazing. Helen, can't wait to see you.
Amazing. Oh, that is so, so good. I did not know that. You've just made my day sharing that. So people do travel far and wide to get involved in our OTI events, which is brilliant. So if you want any further information, just drop me an email and we will share that with you. £25 a ticket, and it is ticket only. It makes me laugh. Sounds ridiculous saying that, but it's true. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. As always, thank you for listening, and same time next week.